Good morning. So the title of my presentation is Managing Nutrition and Health in a Changing Climate, a Yellowknife Dania First Nation Perspective. I don't have any relationships to disclose. And today I will provide you with an introduction to the study, its methodology, results, and briefly its discussion. And I'd like to start with sharing with you that my initial exposure to climate change was via the polar bears. And my understanding was that with warming temperatures, we had melting ice, and thus polar bears were at risk of losing their habitat. Today, we understand that climate change is projected to affect global food systems and is presently affecting traditional food systems and thus creating inequitable costs for Indigenous people who rely on both systems. And Arctic Indigenous people are particularly vulnerable to climate change due to the influence of the Arctic's natural resources on their economic and nutritional status, their social-cultural identity, and their physical and spiritual health. And I believe that Tribal Chairman Gary Harrison says it best by sharing that climate change threatens to deprive us of our rights to sustain ourselves as we have done for thousands of years. Arctic Indigenous peoples are threatened with the extinction or catastrophic decline of entire bird, fish, and wildlife populations, including species of caribou, seals, and fish critical to our food security. And I believe, like many of you here, I believe food is a human right. And therefore, if we are to address issues around food security and subsequently nutrition, then we need to comprehend Indigenous peoples' lived experience and resilience to climate and global environmental change. That will be important to the development of programs that protect the well-being of Indigenous people and also that may contribute to the local, national, and international dialogue around nutrition and climate-related policy. And so the research aimed to answer the question, how do members of Yellowknife Dene First Nation who harvest and use traditional foods manage their nutrition and life in a changing climate and global environment? I was introduced to the Dene National Chief Bill Erasmus by Dr. Harriet Kuhnlein of McGill University. And in 2008, after being vetted, I secured a summer internship and looked at the factors contributing to the decline of caribou. I also at this time explored the feasibility of doing my dissertation research with Yellowknife Dene First Nation. And in 2010, I received approval from the Tribal Council and the Government of the Northwest Territories. I used an ethnographic constructivist grounded theory method that involved recording the day-to-day activities through sustained participation and observation in 3 to 1 month intervals over a period of 4 years. I participated in every opportunity that allowed me to experience and observe the day-to-day activities related to the harvesting and use of traditional foods. In addition to the observations and photo journaling, I interviewed 13 members of Yellowknife Dene who harvest and use traditional foods. I collected data in the spring, summer, and fall, and purposely chose not to collect data in the winter when harvesting was limited. The interview guide used aimed to collect data based on the participants' lived experience that revealed their views, feelings, intentions, and actions. And theoretical sampling aimed towards understanding the topic and process of interest and not at obtaining a representative sample. As noted earlier, I am using a constructivist approach where I'm co-constructing the meaning of the data, and thus inevitably my bias will be introduced. I address my bias by making explicit my role and values and their impact on the research. I believe our nutritional status and our nutrition-related behavior is a product of our environment, and thus I use this perspective in analyzing and organizing the data. I'll start with the individual level results. Yellowknife Dene First Nations are motivated to harvest and use traditional foods, one, because there's a pride in being Dene, but also because in protecting the lands and waters, this is viewed as an expression of gratitude and respect for their ancestors and for the legacy that they have left for them. And here, legacy refers to the traditional knowledge that has been transferred over generations, the treaty negotiated, and the trails traveled, all viewed as privileges left by their ancestors for them and their responsibility to leave this for future generations. There are also spiritual benefits that motivate Dene to harvest and use traditional foods, most notably the feeling, again, of feeling connected to their ancestors when on the land and waters. Some also experience healing from affliction with substance misuse while being on the land. And others find respite from the city noise and the land's quietness. And here, respite is literal but also descriptive of the noise that may interrupt tranquility, such as the constant ringing of a cell phone or the stress of city living. And some believe there's negative energy in the city, and this refers to activities such as gambling and substance access that may interfere with the well-being of the individual, family, or community. Now we'll look at the social environmental results. And family, the learning of traditional foods and how to balance store foods with traditional foods starts at home. And more recently, the teaching of young daughters and nieces on how to hunt, handle a rifle or shotgun, set snares, and the transferring of knowledge about trails are efforts to increase young women's independence and ensure their access to traditional foods. This effort is also a shift from traditional gender roles and demonstrates the dynamic nature of culture. And while the wage economy may limit the time a family has to go on the land, strategies to address this concern include providing cultural days to go hunting and, over the years, incorporating DNA skills into the formal school curriculum. Elders have played a significant role in shaping the lives of middle-aged adults. They teach them about DNA culture and history, including traditional food practices. And they continue to be a source of health via humor, understanding that laughter releases endorphins and has a bonding effect that plays an important role in building society. There's also a loss, however, of the loss of elders and within the loss of traditional knowledge and language, and even a greater concern over there being less contact between elders and youth. The dynamics between elders and children including youth, has changed. Participants express wanting to incorporate elders into learning opportunities for children, but recognize the difficulty of having to compete with the existing technology that are sources of entertainment and learning in the present day. Community sharing of wild meat, fish, birds, and other resources increases access to traditional foods and contributes to community cohesion and food security. In addition to food, other resources shared include ammunition, funds, and the territory to harvest. However, sharing may be limited by the need for cash to purchase goods or the need of cash to help support the hunter's expenses. At times, there also may be a feeling of having to have goods to trade, and there also is a challenge of having limited funds to help each other. And this quote relates to the sharing of knowledge and states, "It makes me happy to see my daughter and sister carefully picking berries and not stomping all around it." Government also influences the harvest and use of traditional foods. The 2009 ban on hunting caribou and the firearm license and registration requirements are two examples that have limited harvesting of traditional foods. And although there is evidence of the collaboration between YK Dene and the government of the Northwest Territories, there exists a concern over devolution and the loss of Dene First Nations' voice in the dialogue around natural resource management. Here, this quote states, "Each year it feels like the government gives less and less and interprets the treaty in a manner that limits more and more our rights to our lands and waters." And lastly, I'd like to share the physical environmental level results that revolve around adapting. And these include moving hunting camps and fishing sites in response to environmental changes due to migration patterns, having an increase in flexibility in hunting schedules and species preferred, and an increased representation in institutions that influence the environment, such as the Government of the Northwest Territories, the Mackenzie Valley Environmental Review Board, and in the private sector, now the Yellowknife Dene have their own corporation that invests in economic development. And an ongoing effort has been increased advocacy at the national and international levels through their own band, through Dene Nation, and at the federal level through Assembly of First Nations, and internationally through the Arctic Athabascan Council and the Arctic Council. And here's this quote. There's a lot of old people. They are spiritually. They know what's happening way ahead of time. Some old people I just talked to say caribou disguise a lot. And I like this quote because it shows how cycles of species is understood, cycles of nature, but also the importance of that spiritual element and their connection to the land. They have also adopted technology which has increased their safety and efficiency in hunting practices, and today there's greater vigilance and monitoring of traditional food safety due to the uncertainty in the presence of toxins in country and traditional foods. And so in conclusion, a key implication to nutrition and health that resonates with me are around issues, and I'm sorry you may not be able to see that very well, but revolve around issues related to food security and nutrition transitions, both of which can increase the individual's risk of chronic disease. And therefore, programs and policies that build on DNA knowledge and experience may contribute to effective interventions and policy development that promotes and protects the quality of life and the public health of members of Yellowknives Dene First Nation as a means of primary and secondary prevention to chronic disease. Matthew Cho, thank you.
We do have time for some questions.
Sure. Yeah. So this past summer was I wrapped up the study this past summer and shared actually this very presentation with key informants, and they are now they're currently in the process of applying for a grant through the government of the Northwest Territory so that the government transfers the funds to the band so that they are able to provide their own health services. And one of the exciting elements that they're introducing to the proposal are land-based health programs. So for example, for mental health issues, rather than in the Western world, we see a therapist, we go to their office. They're looking at taking individuals. The area of the Northwest Territories is made up of various bodies of water, and so there's islands, and so they're looking to actually take groups to an island and sort of have healing practices there, again, around issues of mental health. But they're also looking to do that to address issues around substance misuse. Yeah. Yes, sir?
There seems to be some concern about possible toxins
in the food supply.
Have you identified specific toxins like mercury?
Sure. Well, sure. So mercury is probably one of the key ones. Oh, sorry. The question was if I can give specific examples of the concerns around food safety, and in particular what toxins are of concern. And so, yes, mercury is a key concern because with the warming waters, there's a release of mercury, and then we see that a higher concentration of that in fish, particularly in larger mammals. This is a particular concern for the Inuit who hunt whales and seals, but for Yellowknives Dene who are harvesting smaller whitefish, it's less of a concern. That said, there was an education campaign put out to increase people's awareness of this, but unfortunately it was excellent for the Inuit, but sort of had a negative impact for Yellowknives because, again, the size of their fish is smaller, and so their risk was not as great. And so now there's a re-education for Yellowknives to let them know it's okay to continue consuming the smaller fish. Mercury is of concern. And there's others, and I'm sorry, the word has like four, they're so long that I don't recall, but there are other toxins as well that are actually in the plants and also bioaccumulate in caribou that has been of concern. Yes. What they've done in terms of traditional foods? Oh, advocacy, yes. Well, so currently devolution is the biggest concern, and that's where the local government, the government of the Northwest Territories, wants to be the one to negotiate with the federal government on how resources are used. And so that currently they're actually just submitted letters to their justices to have a hearing to ensure that they remain at the table at these negotiation talks. But also, so there's a soft law, right? So through the Arctic Council, they're involved in that. And the Arctic Council is made up of has representation of seven countries in the Arctic. And they provide recommendations to internationally on around climate change and around how to protect the Arctic's natural resources. And then locally, through the Mackenzie Valley Environmental Review Board, they actually have representation there. And so it's an ongoing struggle, but it occurs locally, nationally, and internationally.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Great.